Welcome to Pop Health Week, streaming live on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm Greg Masters, co-founder and executive producer. Joining me in the virtual studio is partner and co-founder Fred Goldstein, lead host and president at Accountable Health, LLC. Pop Health Week is your destination for unfiltered conversations with the visionaries driving population health forward. Whether you're a payer, provider, patient vendor, or policymaker, this is your go-to hub for fresh strategies and insights into population health best practices. Want to stay connected? Visit popupstudio.productions or message me on Twitter via @GregMastersMPH, and that's Greg with two G's, and do follow the show @PopHealthWeek. To reach Fred direct, visit www.accountablehealthllc.com. With no further delay, Fred, who's in the seat today?
So, Chris, welcome to Pop Health Week.
Fred, thanks so much for having me. It's been a long time, and I'm super excited to have a chat with you today and talk a little bit about our business and talk a little bit about what we're seeing in the marketplace. And hopefully the listeners can gain some insights from 30 years of twisted ankles and scuffed knees. So
absolutely. So let's begin sort of at the beginning. Give us a little bit of your background.
Yeah. So started in out of college, started with a consumer electronics business now called Dish Network. So I spent the first 10 years of my career helping transition from large satellite TV dishes to direct-to-home broadcast satellite TV dishes, working for EchoStar, now called Dish Network. So that was a great experience where I learned how to do battle against the big boys. The competitor at that time was DirecTV, and DirecTV was owned by General Motors. So, you know, you very, very quickly knew every time you came to work, you had less money, less resources, and you still had to try to find ways to innovate. So it kind of set my mindset in terms of how I think about business. Then I got the opportunity to transition to a healthcare business in the mid-90s. And that was a really exciting time, right? There was really no EMRs. There were disparate systems everywhere.
Right.
The programming languages that most of the healthcare systems infrastructure was coded in was something called MUMPS. And companies that no longer exist today were using that technology. And so it was a great opportunity to learn from the inside out about how the healthcare system worked. And understanding the various challenges that were there, especially from a technology perspective.
And so you really sort of started out like at almost a consumer-focused company in a sense, and thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a direct-to-consumer, but we also sold through distribution. So I got a healthy dose of experience learning how to work through regional distributors. At that time, there was no Best Buys, right? There was mom and pop radio, TV, electronics stores. If you wanted to buy a new TV or something, you went to your local store and purchased a TV, and maybe they brought it home and set it up for you. Maybe you put it in the back of your car and did it yourself, right? So it was kind of a mixed distribution model, which is really, really important to just kind of think about our business and think about how we expand and grow our business. And then in healthcare, it was a technology firm that had a practice management system that was sold to, you know, single and small doc practices, which is a really, really tough way to make a living, right? But it was using some advanced technology, and then we ended up transitioning that business, selling the product off and keeping the engineering team, and starting to do bespoke consulting work for payers and providers. So on the payer side, we did work for Amisys. We did work for Facets. On the provider side, we worked for Epic. We worked for IDX. We worked for Sunquest, Antrim. And then we did a bunch of DoD work, because at that time, the Department of Defense healthcare system was also written in that same MUMPS technology. So we had deep channels of knowledge there. So it made it a really fun time. We had Y2K coming, and so that was causing everyone lots of nerves. So it was a fun time to be young and aggressive and trying to understand industry and trying to figure out how to change that industry.
Absolutely. Well, tell us about Elegant.
Yeah. So got the opportunity to work with our investors and formed Elegant Health back in December of 24. And, you know, so here we are 9 months later. And the thesis behind the business was simple. We said, hey, healthcare costs too much. Running an ACO, running a payer plan just is too expensive. There's too many manual processes. We need to figure out how to help these folks automate those. So we said, well, what are the components that you need to do that? Well, the very first component is we need to have some analytics capabilities. So HealthyC, one of our founding companies, was a top class ranked product, had been doing population health for years, had a variety of things from MSSPs to ACOs, to ACO reaches, to delegated entities. And so we had deep expertise in everything from quality measures to RAF scores to, you know, the helping clients migrate version 24 to 28 and all those challenges. And then what we didn't really have deep expertise in was care management and utilization management. And so we said, in order to form a really complete solution, we ought to take the analytics piece and we ought to butt that up against a delivery mechanism. And that was the Virtual Health Helios platform. And so that platform has been well adopted by a large number of regional payers. And so we really saw an opportunity there to say, okay, how do we make these care management, utilization management, and disease management systems smarter and use analytics to power that? And so that was really the thesis of the business and how we plan to take the business forward. So it's been 9 months. It's been a lot of fun. We've had a bunch of new folks grow and add to the business. We've added some new folks. And so it's just kind of a fun time to be in healthcare and focused on how do we help people take cost out of healthcare.
Yeah, and I think it's really fascinating you talk about this, bringing this really strong data and analytics team and platform in with the care management team. Because I remember back in the day, I built the care management side of it, and then I was going out and finding a much better data and analytics tool than I myself could create. You know, I had it, but it was nowhere close to what some of these others were doing. But you've really brought the two together, which I think creates really unique strengths.
Yeah, it allows us to efficiently serve a couple of different marketplaces that seemingly would be disconnected. So we have a strong, robust payer business where regional payers are looking at their, I'll just call it a clinical operating system, and saying it's time for a change, it's time for newer technologies, it's time for, I won't call it AI because AI to me, I grew up in the world with artificial ingredients were bad in your foods. So I didn't want anything artificial. So I look at it more like augmented intelligence.
Absolutely.
Right? So how do we gather data? How do we present that data and then keep the human being in the loop so that they can make smarter, faster decisions, serve more of the population, dive deeper where they need to, that kind of thing. And then really the focus is how do we take that technical efficiency and allow a plan to either scale larger or allow it to become more efficient and drive more efficiencies. And then in the ACO marketplace, we see much the same challenge, right? You've got a heterogeneous computing environment. You may have practices that are on three or four different EMRs. They don't plan on consolidating because only a portion of their attributed lives are in this value-based care plan. So it doesn't make sense for them to combine the practice. They're mostly independent practices because they haven't sold out to a large health system at this point. And they're struggling with the tools that they can apply across all those different platforms to say, on Tuesday, what's happening with my diabetics? On Wednesday, what's happening with my COPD or chronic patients? How do I remind somebody that they need a chronic, they need an annual wellness visit, and those kind of things? So that's where we really see the differentiators in the marketplace is us being able to aggregate tons of data. I think at last count we'd aggregated data from over 275 different EMR systems.
Wow!
And then the ability to combine that into a platform to make it actionable.
Mm-hmm. And I know you also bring in more than just the, you know, the EMR data, the client, you bring in social determinants of health data and others to create a fully rounded picture.
Yeah. So what we've tried to do is say, hey, as a small company, we can't be everything to everybody. So there are areas like social determinants of health, where we've got great partnerships with NowPal Unite Us, and we've got great partnerships with Find Help, and our clients can selectively add those into the platform and power that into the platform as they need, depending on their demographic and the markets they're serving. So we think of the world much like an ecosystem, much like an app store, if you will, where I don't need to have, Apple doesn't need to put an app out for booking travel, right? There are plenty of other places that can build an app to book travel. Apple needs to provide that infrastructure, the security, and the platform for that to run on efficiently. And that's what we want to do.
And that's essentially what you've created, is the ability to integrate data from all these different sources, connect out to these different support sources in a secure and efficient manner.
Yep, absolutely. Yes. I mean, security is paramount. You know, we're high trust certified, and we take great pride in the work that we do there. I was joking with our security leader. He said, Chris, he said, you're the first guy that CEO I've ever worked with that was the first guy to complete their security and risk training. He said, what gives? He said, most times I got to badger the CEOs to do that work. And I said, Joe, you know, the bottom line is, this is the most important guts of our business. If our clients don't feel like we can be secure, and if as the CEO, I can't lead there and I can't be first, then no one's going to think it's important, when in fact, it's vital importance, right? Our clients need to know that their data is secure. Their clients need to know that we take security seriously. And I need to be the leader in that and do my work to help our other teammates realize how important this really is.
Yeah, it's fantastic to make that statement when you consider all of the things we see as headlines around healthcare, you know, leaks, security break-ins, and how the impact has really whacked these organizations. You know, unbelievable. Yeah.
You know, it's even less about the organizations. I mean, they're, you know, organizations are resilient, they're smart people, they'll figure it out, they'll power through. But I think about the patients.
Sure.
Right? I've got a son in college that's on medications, and we're on my wife's health plan, and you know, their pharmacy benefit manager uses Change to adjudicate the claims. And once it happened, I told my son, I said, dude, you better get on the phone with your doc and you better figure out how to get any extra meds you need, because it's going to be really tough for them to process these things. And he's like, well, Dad, I don't understand. And so I had to lay out, explain how these systems work and how interconnected they are. So I think about the patients at the end of the day, that we just can't put them at risk and them not being able to receive the services that they need.
Just tuning in, you're listening to Pop Health Week on Healthcare Now Radio with host Fred Goldstein, president of Accountable Health LLC. Stay tuned for the rest of the story.
Yeah, now, you know, you talked, Chris, about high trust certified. I also know that you're NCQA pre-validated.
Yes,
with your system as well. And I remember years ago going through those kinds of, that, you know, whether it was URAC or NCQA, it's a lot of work, but it really makes a statement about the organization.
Yeah, I think we're committed to providing a platform that our customers can build on and grow with over time. And if you're not thinking about, you know, your security and your pre-certifications and things like that, you know, then you're putting your customers in a place where they have to do that work themselves, and that just makes it a really difficult place to put clients in. So I try to advance the infrastructure as best we can, to the extent that we can, and give our clients the tools they need to craft it as needed.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about, you mentioned, you know, payers and ACOs, and while they could be very different, at the end of the day, they're in these value-based contracts. Risk is risk, and they've got to effectively manage that. So when you look at that, you've got these systems together. How do you look at that?
You know, because on the payer side, you actually see, you know, an ACO is just a subset of what a payer may already have in place, right? And so in a payer, they may have several lines of business. They may support value-based arrangements. They may support direct contracting. They may support, self-insured employers. They may have a fully insured line of business. Well, at the end of the day, the insurance doesn't dictate, what needs to happen in terms of clinical efficacy, right? We need to be able to present clinical efficacy regardless, and then let the plan terms dictate what they do with it. So our focus has been on providing that clinical operating system, making sure that we can notify and analyze what data we need so that they can make the right decision for their business. So I'm not going to tell them how to run their business, but I'm going to make darn sure that I've got the tools to enable them to run their business.
Within the benefits package and the model that they've selected and how they're going to go about that.
Yeah. And we'll find it, we find it separate for, there are some standalones, but there are a lot of payers that are operating multiple plans in multiple states and are operating in with different configurations. And the thankfulness is our software supports, those kinds of configurations. So it's helpful for them to know that they're with a software provider that can, as they have to, if they get hit with new regulations and new changes, we can keep pace with that and we can configure the system to do what they needed to do.
And how about from the ACO perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging. I mean, especially for the sector of the market that we're really serving, these folks are in a defensive position, and they're trying to maximize their reimbursement. They're trying to do the right things for their patient, administer care, and the administrative burden for them to do that is just really difficult. So we've got to find ways to simplify that. We've got to find ways to take steps out and lower the administrative burden that these guys need to. All they want to do is get up every day and take great care of their patients. And so we need to be an enabling force to allow them to do that.
Mm-hmm. And in the system, obviously when you're thinking about, population health management or disease management, care management, long-term, LTSS patients, or these broader groups, or even from a payer side, the number of steps that these organizations go through to do something and how those steps actually flow and what people have to do manually. Can you give some examples of areas where you've made some adjustments?
So our system has a really powerful workflow engine in it, and it's highly configurable. So as the different plan documents are reviewed and requirements, we can configure the patient or the member by plan and by the attributes within that plan. So not every patient or member gets treated exactly the same. So we have little switches and levers in the system to allow us to do that and account for that. And a lot of times in a highly configurable system like ours, there's multiple ways to accomplish the same task. And so what we're trying to do is work deeper with our clients to say, okay, how do we drive further success? Just because the system's working today and getting your work done doesn't mean it's the best way of doing it. So we're looking at ways to come back to our clients and say, we've analyzed your workflow. We think there are steps that we can help you take out. We think there are configurations we can make to make the system more impactful. And to us, that's just good business, and it's great for patients and great for members.
And at the same time, as these organizations or ACOs or payers are transitioning from other systems, they can bring you what they're looking to do that's different perhaps from what they had, right? It's not just you're coming from one side.
Yeah. In fact, that's we were on a kickoff call with a new client the other day. And my first comments were, just because you've been doing it a certain way doesn't mean that's the best way to do it. So we need to use this opportunity to look at our workflow, to analyze what we're doing. And is it, we're doing it because that's the way it must be done, or we're doing it because that's the way the system is currently configured? And can we find better ways to do it? At the end of the day, for these payers and these ACOs, if we can lower the administrative burden and then give them more time with patients, more time with members, everybody wins. So we have to continue to do that, and we have to press that with our installation. And now we've just spun up a client success team that's going to go out and help these clients work even more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. And you've talked about, payers, ACOs. Your typical client or somebody that would be looking to put your product in?
Yeah, so I think it's regional health plans are certainly at most risk, right? The national boys have billions of dollars. They can enter or exit a market where when they want to. And so the regional players have the most to gain, but the most to lose. And so they're looking at ways to drive efficiency. I was with a Midwest Blues plan in July, and their leadership team told us, they said, you know, we want to look at anything that you can do to help us take cost out, right? Anything in that software, if it's partner related, if it's patient related, tell us what we can do. We've got to continue to drive efficiencies in the way we work. And I hear that from our ACO clients as well. We don't know what the next year's regs are going to be. So we need to maximize everything as soon as we can in every single year, and make sure that we're building that muscle memory within the practices to take the best care of patients and also get patients more involved in their care. I think that's the last piece that's missing is how do we get patients more involved in their care?
Yeah, and Fessy mentioned that. I'm teaching you a policy class right now at Mississippi Medical Center School of Population Health. And I was just reading one of Atul Gawande's pieces where he was talking about the value of a specialist. You know, oh, I think it's higher than the value of primary care. And then when he met with the primary care folks, he, being a surgeon, said, oh my gosh, the value you actually bring is that long-term relationship, that relationship with the patient that allows you to be able to identify things, figure things out, and get the patients to participate because they trust you. So that whole relationship piece is just critical.
Oh, it's massive. I look at, you know, the difference between primary care and specialists. So when you're diagnosed with something and you need a specialist, you know, you want to try to find the best specialist, you know, with the most experience and the best cost and the best outcomes, right? And for hopefully for most, you know, that's a one-time event or maybe a couple of times in a lifetime event. And so having a deep relationship with that specialist is not necessarily that important. But because most life challenges build over time, having that relationship with your primary care physician is critical, right? The ability to ask a question and be able to ask a question that, where you're not judged, you know, how do I deal with this? How do I deal with that? Is this something that's critical? Is it not critical? Having that open dialogue with your primary care physician is just ultimately key. And I want to encourage people to stop thinking about primary care physicians as, you know, once a year I see them when I have my annual wellness visit, right? I mean, they should be a steady resource. And with a lot of the tools that are out there today, you know, and the ability to do virtual visits and secure email, you know, there's now a way to communicate things that are happening in somebody's life and get ahead of things, which ultimately saves cost. You know, Fred, we've built an incredible sick care system. When someone gets sick, I'm bullish on America and I'm bullish on the U.S. healthcare system. To me, there's no place in the world I'd rather have an ailment than in the United States, because I think right. We have the best care. I think we do. But the question and why our cost of care is so high is because we don't do anything on health care. We do it on sick care. So we wait exactly. Till you get sick, and then we apply all the technology and resources that we can, and we have great outcomes, given the fact that the string is halfway out of the yo-yo, so to speak. What I'd like to see us start to do as a healthcare system is start to apply those things earlier on and look at life consequences and make sure that people understand those life consequences. To me, that starts with a relationship with your primary care physician.
Absolutely. And your system also has built in some of those tools like telehealth, messaging,
We could do virtual visits. We could do email. We could do text messaging. We can do all, you know, multimodal. I mean, we live in an omni-channel world these days, right? And so whether it's Zoom like we're working on today, or whether it's Teams, or whether it's a text message, or whether it's, you know, old-fashioned email, you know, there's ways to communicate, and we live in a disconnected world. So all those different ways are important, and you have to be able to access all those.
Chris, early on you talked about AI or augmented intelligence. I like to use that phrase too. Where is that going? What's your belief in that?
Wow. I think it's fundamentally going to change healthcare. I really do. I was at a digital health symposium last week and I was blown away by the advancements that I see leaders making. I mean, Epic's made a major announcement that they're now getting into augmented intelligence or artificial intelligence in their system. There's AWS has made several announcements on the things that they're doing. And so you're seeing areas that these giant companies are starting to really lean into this. And what shocked me the most, Fred, was the uptake by both the CIOs, CEOs, and chief medical officers of these practices and plans. That for the most part, they want to be cautious, but they want to have something that can help them take the cost out. And they see AI or augmented intelligence as a way to do that.
Yeah, and I really think that we've sort of gotten smart about how we introduce this. One is augmented intelligence, ensuring that where absolutely appropriate, you have an individual, a person in the loop. And secondarily, moving the focus from, oh, we're going to come in and we're just going to take over your clinical capabilities and practice, to we're going to take over your operational and service areas where you can create huge efficiencies.
Yeah, no question. I mean, there was a presenter at the symposium last week, and they're building a new hospital, and they have no computers in the rooms of the hospital, right? So they've got a TV, and they're putting in what they call ambient listening. Yeah. And so when the physician walks in or the nurse walks in, they're able to call the computer to attention, so to speak, and they're able to examine their patient and document everything they need to document verbally, voice to text. It all gets entered into their record, and then at the end of the day, they can approve it and publish it on. So this means more time with the patient, not with your head down in a computer. We've all been to physicians where they're so busy documenting, they're talking while they're documenting. So more eye contact, more interpersonal relationships. I think that means better care, right? And this stuff is all advancing. 10 years ago, you never would have seen that. 10 years ago, you know, we were selling workstations for the patient's room, and workstations for the examination room. And if your doc was advanced, maybe they used an iPad or something like that, and they'd carry it from room to room. Nowadays, we're going to see these things going more towards ambient listening, natural language processing, and the ability to voice guide through their documentation, spend more time with their patients.
Fantastic. Well, is there anything you'd like to close with? We want to thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no, I think it's an exciting time to be in healthcare. I think there's a lot of people that are nervous, and I think that you know, the both sides of the political aisle have a lot of tension about where things are going. You know, as I said earlier, I'm bullish on the U.S. healthcare system. I think it's the best system in the world. I see that when I first got into healthcare, I would go visit a hospital system, and there was always a hotel attached to major medical centers. And I thought to myself, what's there a hotel for? Is that just for like the patient's families? And the reality was there are people flying in all over the place to receive care. So that's happening now. And I know that other countries have advanced and they've done training and things like that, but I'm still bullish on where we are. We have some things to work on. We have some things from a cost structure to get out of the way. And at Elegant Health, we're helping remove some of those administrative burdens. But I'm still very bullish. I think this is a great time to be in healthcare and a great time to be learning and growing and helping our physicians and their care teams provide better care at the point of care and making it more personal.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on Pop Health Week, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Fred. I appreciate it. Take care.
And that's a wrap for today, folks. A big thank you to our global audience for tuning in. If Pop Health Week resonates with you, show us some love. Give us a thumbs up on your favorite podcast platform. Share it with your network and do subscribe so you never miss a future episode. Remember, we're live on Healthcare Now Radio every weekday at 5:30 a.m., 1:30 p.m., and 9:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 2:30 a.m., 10:30 a.m., and 6:30 p.m. Pacific. On behalf of Fred Goldstein, myself, and the crew at Healthcare Now Radio, stay safe, stay tuned, and we'll catch you next time.